It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
The Good Food Awards celebrate the kind of food we want to eat: tasty, authentic, and responsible. Awards are granted to outstanding American food producers and the farmers who provide those ingredients. Recipients push their industries towards craftsmanship and sustainability while enhancing the agricultural landscape and building strong communities. At the 2018 awards held in San Francisco, we visit with one of the winners, Samantha Genke, co-owner of Boxcar Cheese from North Carolina. But first, we're visiting with the founder of Good Foods, Sarah Wiener. Sarah, tell us about the Good Food Awards.
Well, the Good Food Awards started 8 years ago, and the idea was that there were a lot of ways that chefs had been recognized, especially with the James Beard Awards, and that was a really powerful way to drive business to chefs and a really powerful platform to give to chefs. And it was really a beautiful thing that people, you know, who hadn't previously been recognized, there were only, you know, if you think 40 years ago, maybe the general population knew one or two chefs' names. But people who had a lot to say and were very hardworking had a chance to get out of the kitchen and be recognized for what they do. And that there was nothing really like that for pickle makers or jam makers distillers to be recognized on this broader level. And so we thought we might create something like that with a twist, which the twist being that everything that even enters needs to be tasty, authentic, and responsible. So it needs to be sustainably made, and there's very specific criteria we have around each of our 15 categories. And so our hope is to recognize really amazing, hardworking people and also to drive consumer support towards the kind of food that makes the world better.
And you've chosen to identify it as tasty, authentic, and responsible. We're standing right outside, so people are walking around by us, and doors are opening and closing, but we're right at the event. And what was that process that you said, okay, a simple way of identifying what we're going to stand for, tasty, authentic, and responsible? I'm guessing you probably are agonizing over a whiteboard for a couple weekends or something. How did you come to that?
We were inspired by the slow food mantra of good, clean, and fair. And my background is working for Slow Foods International headquarters in Italy. And we, you know, would have been happy just to adopt the same thing, but we didn't want to infringe on them. So we came up with words that evoked a similar feeling and really the same values around tastes amazing, it's authentic, and in that it's like it's real, there's no artificial stuff in it, but also in that it ties to a tradition and kind of knowledge, and responsible, meaning responsible to people. People are being treated well, responsible to animals, responsible to the earth.
And the scope of what you're covering, it looks to me like you got lots of cheeses, there's olive oil, there's jams, there's coffee, there's not bread, there's not bakery items. There's not produce, but that's other than that, you pretty well cover the spectrum, it looks like.
Yeah, our hope and goal when we started was to really give some support to what is commonly referred to as like the specialty food industry or value-added foods. It's the kind of food that farmers, you know, might be growing something or raising something, but then they transform it into something more shelf-stable. Because no one was working with value-added food producers to unite those of them that are sustainable.
So that's kind of the connection. It's their added value. It's just not just picking the fruit and taking it to the farmer's market. There's something being done to it.
Exactly. And it makes a lot more sense in the context of what we're doing than giving the awards for, you know, the best apple, because we want people to eat their local apple. And those things really decline in quality if they're shipped or stored too long, whereas the kind of foods we work with can benefit more fully from a national recognition.
Well, Slow Food was an international movement. Now, is yours just national now, or is it international as well?
We work just with American food producers. We have had interest from Mexico, from Poland, from Australia, and starting Good Food Awards there. But so far, we're sticking to America. There's a lot of work to be done here. There's a lot happening, but there's a lot of work too.
So is the goal in promoting this type and recognizing, Tasty, Authentic, and Responsible, is it in the contest itself, or do you do beyond the awards?
We do have three other key projects. So the awards happen once a year, but then year-round we have a group called the Good Food Guild that great producers of, these kinds of value-added foods who meet these high criteria for production can join. We have about 440 members now in about 40 states, and we help them year-round with things like... For example, guild members get a free posting on Good Food Jobs, so they have a little bit of support finding the people they need when they're hot growing. They get discounts at the Food Craft Institute and the Presidio School of Business, sort of sustainable courses. Then we have another project called the Good Food Mercantile, which actually took place yesterday. We do it three times a year in three different cities. And we call it the Untrade Show for Tasty, Authentic, and Responsible Food, with the idea that it's a counterpoint and symbiotic also with bigger trade shows that don't have any criteria around the production practices of those who are showing. Because what we found is that a lot of smaller values-based food producers, like the people who win the awards, mm-hmm. can get lost in a really big trade show with 3,000 producers, sure. many of whom have a much larger marketing budgets to build out their spaces. So our show is just about 100 or 150 all top quality, amazing food producers. And rather than attracting 10,000 buyers, we have more like 500, but they're all looking for the kind of food we have inside.
Would this result in people having like small supermarket chains or restaurants that are coming here and they're identifying somebody that they want to be able to source some of these products in the future to these events?
Yeah, absolutely. So like yesterday at the Good Food Mercantile, Ari from Zingerman's was here tasting through the cheeses and elixirs. We had Sam Mulganum of Byright Market. We had the owners of Cured in Boulder, a beautiful little shop. We had... Each Peach from Washington, D.C., their buying team was here. We had the head of purchasing for Market of Choice out in Eugene in Portland, Oregon. So a lot of independently owned shops. We also had Williams-Sonoma and Whole Foods and some of the larger quality-focused folks. But
so you're having people that are from all over. They choose to join you to come and participate with you because I suppose they're learning too, and they're around other people that are similar stages. But then they can also it helps them market what they're producing as
yeah.
well. How do you make sure that these companies are up to your standards? That it is tasty, authentic, and responsible. How mm-hmm. how do you screen them?
Mm-hmm. We have a very very rigid, well, it's not completely rigid, but we have a very clear set of criteria that's specific to each industry we work in. So the criteria that an olive oil producer needs to meet is different from the criteria that a spirits producer needs to meet. However, these criteria are all on our website, and anyone who's going to be at the Mercantile or the Good Food Awards has to answer questions to each of our points around, for example, where are you sourcing your fruit for a preserve? How do you know there's no pesticides? Pesticides or herbicides? Is it certified organic? Or if not, how do you verify that with your farmer? And we review every single application for those 440 that are in. Oftentimes end up calling the farms or the spice suppliers. Sometimes we suggest alternative sources that would meet our criteria. So that's our process.
You know, in the process of answering that question, you answered my next question, Sarah. And that is, it's not exclusively organic. But what I heard you saying is that they need to have the story. They need to be able to verify to you, mm-hmm. If they're not certified organic, mm-hmm. what are their production practices?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We understand that there's a lot of different ways people can do good things in terms of growing, and that there's some amazing farmers that have never sprayed anything on their fields, but chose not to become certified organic for a variety of reasons. And we certainly don't want to exclude those folks. We just want to understand what they're doing, and we want to make sure the producer who's buying from them understands that. That's very important to us.
In this case, say if consumers would like to know companies that are have been recognized by Good Food, how do consumers find out about it?
We would suggest you check out our website, goodfoodawards.org, and there's a list of this year's winners. This year's 199 winners, with links to all their websites, as well as all the past year's winners, because altogether we have 690 companies that have been recognized.
Wow.
In probably 45 of the states. But we also would suggest you keep a lookout for the little blue seal. It's a little blue square. A lot of our winners put it on their winning beer or cider or pickles or cheese, and that really tips you off.
Should we expect that all of these winners can explain back to the origin? They got a story of the farmer. If they're not the farmer themselves, that they have a story about the farmers that are supplying them?
Absolutely. And it's very heartwarming to talk with them about it.
That's great. Well, it's an exciting event, and I've had a chance to sample some of the things that are here, and it's wonderful. And again, if people want to know more about Good Food, where do they look online?
Goodfoodawards.org.
That's great. Well, thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're standing out along San Francisco Bay in Fort Mason. I really want to welcome Samantha Genke to Farm to Table Talk. Tell us the name of your cheese company.
It's Boxcar Handmade Cheese.
How come Boxcar Homemade Cheese ends up coming, or Handmade Cheese, ends up coming all the way to San Francisco for Good Food Award?
Well, we won the Good Food Award yesterday, so we flew out here to promote it. So today we're doing the Farmers Market event. I think yesterday they had another event. We didn't participate. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're here. We do sell some cheese in San Francisco.
Tell me your story. Now, your cheese company, how did you come to create a cheese company back home in North Carolina?
So I was working at Whole Foods. I'm going all the way back a long time ago, in the cheese counter. And I really wanted to work on a farm. And so I would always cut out pictures of people, you know, making cheese or working on a farm. I'd cut out pictures of the goats. I was like 20, I think. And then one summer I started applying for internships, not thinking I would get anything. So from there, I got an internship at Goat Lady Dairy, and I went and worked outside with the goats for a kidding season. And I think it was like
three... What they call a kidding season?
Kidding season for goats. The goats are kids.
So we have a little background noise.
Yeah.
There's a truck going behind us, standing, and we got seagulls flying overhead right now. So you were kidding season.
Yeah, I did the internship for, it was 3 or 4 months in the winter. You know, I'm from Florida, it was the year, I think, of the ice storm in North Carolina. So it was very cold, and I just loved it. I loved the little baby goats. I loved the mama goats. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. But I didn't really have any money or any idea how to make it happen. So I moved back to Florida after the internship and picked up at my job at Whole Foods and kind of started planning. And then I got offered a job from one of their friends at Chapel Hill Creamery, which is a local cheese-making facility in Chapel Hill. And they're farmstead, they milk their own Jersey cows. And so I ended up working there for a very long time, almost 10 years. And I worked maybe 2 seasons at Goat Lady in the cheese room. And then my brother and his wife moved to North Carolina. And
wait a minute, you're showing terms in here that not people are used
oh,
to.
Oh, sorry. I
mean, so we went through kidding season, and now you were Goat Lady in the cheese
goat
room.
Goat Lady, yes, Goat Lady.
So they had a cow lady?
Yeah, I worked at 2 facilities. One was goat's milk, so they make goat's milk cheese.
Right.
The other was all cow.
I'm just guessing it's better to be the goat lady than a cow lady.
I prefer goats.
Yeah.
But,
cows
are very big, and I have no interest in milking cows.
Right.
But we make cow's milk cheese.
Okay.
So we buy our cow's milk, definitely. I think we'll always do that. I don't want to have my hands smashed by a cow.
Yeah.
But I know people love cows. I don't mean to.
I interrupted you there because where did the goats come into this? I mean,
so Yeah, so when I moved to North Carolina and got the job at Chapel Hill Creamery, I immediately got goats for my personal use. And the people at Goat Lady were amazing. The mom, Lee, she taught me everything about goats, and she gave me my two first goats, and from then, you know, they kept having babies. So I still have a lot of personal goats, and I've had them since I was, 21, so... Some of my goats are getting very old now.
So they're pets, but they're also producing too?
Well, no, it's kind of complicated. At first, when my brother moved here with his wife, they moved to North Carolina. They bought a beautiful farm. And so they were, you know, they have restaurant backgrounds, and they were thinking, oh, do we open a restaurant? They weren't really sure. And then my brother wrote a business plan for a cheese facility, cheese making. And he said, oh, if we got a business loan, would you be interested? And so we kind of were surprised when we got a loan. Because we're pretty young and we don't have a lot of working capital. And so when we got the loan, we went for it. Austin, my brother, built the cheese house himself with one of my cousins and learned a lot of things on YouTube, how to make it happen. But the cheese house is beautiful. Went with his wife and I, we kind of did the layout of the cheese house from places I've worked in the past. And so it really came together. And so... Yeah, meanwhile, I'm having these goats the whole time, and I've been trying to build the herd and, you know, having this dream of milking these goats and making this cheese, but it's really hard to pay for the goats when they're not, giving you cheese. And,
right,
you know,
right.
So I would wait tables at night to pay for these goats and trying to build the herd. And then finally, when we got the business loan, we said, oh, this isn't enough to milk goats and to build the facility and make the cheese. And so we were like, do we milk goats and sell milk to someone else and then wait and make money hopefully and build the cheese house, or do we do the cheese first and then go backwards? So we made the decision to take the loan money and build the cheese house first and see if we could sell the cheese. So we have two people that we buy milk from, and over the last 2 years we've had little grants and bits of money, so we've started building up our goat herd again. So next spring we will be milking our own goats again. So that's been the goal. But it's, you know, I think when you have just a small amount of money to work with, you know, and so that's why we kind of went backwards about it. But I've had my goats the whole time. I sold the ones, like when we started the cheese house, I said, oh gosh, I have too many goats to feed, and now I'm not going to wait tables at night. So it's kind of overwhelming. So I sold a lot of the goats that I could emotionally handle selling. But then I had a little herd that I couldn't get rid of. So those are the ones I've had. And then my brother and his wife started a new herd, younger goats, because at this point my goats are, 12 years old. Some
so
of them.
They don't produce as much milk.
Yeah. It took a long time to build the herd. So, they're kind of worthless.
What kind of goats do you use to milk?
I love Alpines, but my brother and his wife, their herd is Alpines. They have a Nubian buck, so they'll do some crossbreeding, and they have one La Mancha with no ears, those cute little goats. I think where we are in North Carolina, it's very hot, and the Alpines, a lot of the goats, they have a hard time flourishing with the heat. And the. Mm-hmm. So I think the best thing that we've learned over the years is crossbreeding is pretty important. The Nubian goats withstand the heat a little bit more, and when you crossbreed, you have kind of a hardier animal, and they do better in the heat.
So the goats you will eventually be milking will be half Nubian and half Alpine?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the idea, I think.
And you have to milk them twice a day?
Yes.
Like real early?
Yeah, I think so. My cousin Marshall, he's in his 20s. He's a farmer, and he loosely committed to come for a couple years and kind of get the herd set up and milk. And so it might depend on when he feels like waking up in the morning. I'm not sure. Or maybe it'll be very regimented. I'm not sure if it's going to be super early. But.
Well, now the cow's milk that you've been purchasing, mm-hmm. Are those all local dairies?
Yeah, the cow's milk comes maybe 30 minutes from us. They're a family that's been milking cows for a long time, and they have really great quality milk. They're a grade A facility.
How big are they? They've got a lot of cows?
Yeah, they do have a lot of cows. I'd say they're small, medium, Yeah.
So I bet they're happy to have another market to be able to take their milk to.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So how do you decide what cheeses that you're going to make? You now you're going to have your own goat milk, but you have goat milk and cow's milk.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, okay, this is a cheese I think that we can market, that we can produce very well. How do you make that decision?
We kind of knew we wanted to make a Ribbiola style cheese. We really like the Giatricum, the rind, like the...
You're saying the term
right now. Giatricum rind, the really wrinkly, yeasty.
Sure. Can you eat those?
Yeah.
I usually do, and I always wonder because it's never come on a cheese package. Just say, yeah, eat this waxy stuff on the outside.
It's kind of, it's a very delicate rind. I think the rind on the Ribbiola is thinner than the rind on the Camembert, usually. So we knew that we wanted to do something with that style of cheese and... Alessandra, the woman inside, she's like our sister from another mother, and she's my daughter's godmother, but she's basically family. She's Italian, and so we went to visit her mother, and we looked at some Ribbiola cheese-making places in Italy, and we kind of got some ideas right before we started building the facility. And so we knew we wanted to stick with Italian-style cheeses. We thought maybe that was a little bit of a niche, the American cheese. There wasn't too many people doing those style cheeses, and that's sort of where our family's Italian, and Alessandro's Italian, so I feel like it was sort of inspiration from those.
So Ribbiola is it's soft, kind of soft. It's somewhere between soft and hard. And white.
Yeah, usually. Yeah, a lot of times it's goat's milk. I think that there's a bunch of different variations on the Ribbiola style cheese. Ours, I think if we brought ours to an Italian, they might say, what is this? But, you know, it's our American spin on a very classic Italian cheese. But
well, what did I have this morning? I had two samples out here.
Okay, so what we won for the good food was the Campo, which is a very modified Taleggio recipe, that stinky Italian cheese with the orange rind. So it's a very modified Taleggio recipe. We're a little bit rougher on the curd. We wash it like you would Taleggio. And then my brother cold smokes it for...
What's that mean?
He built like... I guess I don't know much about smoking.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to like that
right.
I'm like...
it's all right. Nobody
but
does.
I think with the cold smoke, it doesn't melt the cheese. That's my my understanding.
Well, it's delicious.
Yeah.
And
it's a light smoke on it, so it's kind of a weird...
So how did you get into this good food organization? What drew you to... What you had to apply to be considered?
Yeah, and then they look at your business practices, where you get your milk from, how the animals are treated. They look at more than just the product. I think they vote, I think to even enter your cheese, you have to be vetted in a way that your business is, I don't know what the word is.
Well, is it tasty, sustainable?
Yeah, sustainable, yeah.
And they're looking authentic, they said, too.
Okay, yeah.
I guess you guys are sounding authentic to me.
Thank you.
It's always a little bit vague to kind of, we kind of know, everybody knows what we think it means when we say authentic, but it's interesting. I mean, and this whole place, everybody that applied to be considered had to meet those standards that the organization applied for. And so, and then you had to send samples to them?
Yes. And then they judged, and they let you know if you made it to the finalist round. And
How many cheese companies applied?
I have no idea.
There must be a lot
because
there's several winners, but they're
and
they come from all over
the country. Yeah.
So it's not unusual to see a food event in San Francisco. It's unusual to run into a North Carolina cheese company. Although I have to say that for Farm to Table Talk, I've got a lot of listeners in North Carolina now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
I look around the country, and it's one of those that just started seeing more and more. So, obviously, there's quite a Farm to Table movement in North Carolina.
Yeah, there's a big food scene.
Yeah.
We're kind of, we're near Durham, we're near Chapel Hill, we're near Raleigh. We're in the country, but from those places, if we were going out to dinner, we would go.
So, is it open to people cities. Get to North Carolina that they can come and... Do you have a shop they can visit?
One day. Not now. But yeah, they could write us an email. We could, we sell cheese. We could say, out of the office if someone wanted to.
But they can check you out online. They can find your story.
Yeah.
And it's Boxcar Cheese.
Boxcarhandmadecheese.com.
Two R's on car.
Yeah. The road we live on is Car Store Road, and it's spelled
C-A-R-R.
You would only know that if you came to the cheese house itself.
I just thought that it was one of those things that the website address wasn't available, and you had to throw an R in.
No. We're naming it after the road.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You know how I found out about you?
I think my brother was very excited.
Oh, yeah. Well,
he loves the restaurant.
I went up to this restaurant in Sacramento
that
is called Mulvaney's, and it's really famous in helping establish the Farm to Fork movement in Northern California. And I went in to do a podcast interview with Patrick Mulvaney, and I brought some baguette with me from Manresa Bread, which just is great. And since he saw me walking in with the baguette, he went and grabbed a great bottle of wine. Actually, brought two bottles of wine over, so we have a Chardonnay and a Pinot to choose from, and to go with the crusty bread. And he brought your cheese to the table. And I said, this is fantastic. And it was really, really soft and almost runny. It was, I described it to your brother.
So it was cotton seed, yeah.
Yeah, your brother was saying it's probably just almost a little overripe.
Yeah.
But it was fantastic.
Oh, that's
so
great.
And it made our conversation so much better to sit around the table and try your cheese. And then that got me thinking. I looked you up on the web then to find out more about you. And then I called, and your brother called me back and said, you're in San Francisco.
Yeah, like...
So come into the Good Food, and you're being awarded. So all this stuff just falls together. It's just a great story. Now, tell me about getting the cheese out to get marketed, because there's not a lot of places you can buy it in California.
No, not right now. For us, logistics is kind of the issue. We have a couple smaller distributors that get the cheese here. But we're so far away getting it on the truck. A lot of our cheeses are soft, so it's a challenge.
So it's mostly North Carolina, Virginia?
We sell a lot of cheese in New York, Florida, because that's where we're from, and the Southeast. But we're hoping to be on the West Coast soon. I think the issue would be figuring out good logistics.
Yeah, but have to fly that soft cheese. I mean, you can't have much time.
We say like 8 weeks from the make date. So it's, you got a cup, but it's like getting it wrapped and packaged and to the store and sold to somebody by that time is, it's a challenge. So I think if we figured out good logistics, we could get some more cheese out here.
So what have you learned back here? You're around other cheese companies. Have you picked up anything as far as like a shared perspective or where they are in developing their business when you come back to Good Food? And see a few other cheese companies, the awards, and they're from all over the United States that are here. Anything you feel like you have in common when you talk to your, I guess, competitors in a way for the awards?
Yeah, I don't know if we look at each other quite like competitors. I think a lot of people are from different areas, so we kind of look at each other like, oh, are you doing this? Or did you have this issue this year? How are you feeling from last year, has this improved? So I don't know. I mean, maybe cheesemakers right next to each other would feel a little bit more competition. But for us, it feels very nice to come to an event where people are kind of living the same insane lifestyle that you are, making the cheese, trying to make a business work. We're all kind of small businesses, and it's hard. So it's really nice for me to see other people and talk about the things that you're dealing with. And so I guess I don't really think competition, but
one thing I think you're doing is you're living a dream. I mean, you're in food.
Yeah.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, I mean, you were goat lady for years before you got this going. You had goats, you like goats, and you worked at Whole Foods for a while. You must have been back at Whole Foods when they still put out the free cheese samples, which is...
Oh, they don't do that anymore now.
I used to love that.
I worked there very early. They had so many perks. I was surprised they gave me a job. I was so young and had really no experience. And But I mean, working at Whole Foods kind of sent me on the path to where I am now. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But back then, it was really...
Now Whole Foods has taken over Amazon, and maybe they'll come back and start giving cheese away again.
Yeah, maybe.
That was one of the things you can go through there and always sample a few before you got them. And they at least had a really great selection.
I wonder if you could ask to try cheese. Are you allowed to
suppose.
And but then you're like having to find
somebody. I think I embarrass my wife when I...
Yeah, when you do that.
And say, I'm going to try this and try that. But I think they might. So you really are getting a chance to follow your dream. Do you get a sense of this that more of that's happening today than might have in years past? I mean, the reason I'm asking kind of a leading question, because maybe I'm just paying more attention now, but I see a lot more companies like yours that are kind of finding their way to the market with these much more artisan style and, you know.
Yeah, smaller.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. The woman that gave the speech at the Good Food Awards, her speech was so great. But she was, you know, kind of saying that this is a really growing part of the food world and, you know, we're taking over. No, I don't know. Her speech made a little bit more sense.
Well, when you look at the future,
Look
at the future. Do you still go in and find that you're competing with, I don't know, Kraft or some other big names that are providing cheese to the supermarkets and to restaurants, or have you find your way to a niche?
I'm not really sure. I think, you know, a customer that goes to Whole Foods and looks at our piece of cheese at $20-something a pound and then looks at the Cabot cheddar that is, you know, a lot cheaper. I don't know if, you know, our cheeses are so different. I don't know if it's necessarily in that same.
But you need that amount, apparently.
I mean,
whatever you're priced at.
Yeah, we do. Unfortunately, we pay a lot for our milk. We pay over than what we, you know, necessarily need to.
Right.
But, you know, the farmers are the ones that are doing all this hard work, and we know how much it costs to raise animals and milk animals and pay yourself. And so we pay a lot for our milk. We haven't, you know, the price of the cheese, once it gets to the store, it's marked up quite a bit, and everybody needs to make a little bit to make their businesses work. And so, I mean, it is a lot once it gets to the case, but,
well,
you know.
I would imagine, kind of like when I've enjoyed your cheese the other day, so you got a nice wine, you get some crusty bread, it's not a special occasion, it's not probably what you're going to use to put in your kids' macaroni.
Right. I put it in my kids' macaroni, but my daughter's very fancy.
Oh. She has no idea how lucky she
she's
is.
She's eating this $25 pound cheese in her macaroni.
Do you grill cheese, too, with it?
I do.
I hope you're at least using a decent sourdough and not just Wonder White bread for the...
No, that's true. I do get nice bread.
Well, that's good. Nice bread, then it's okay to use great cheese with it as well. I guess it's really nice to meet you, and good to hear these stories of where you can follow your dream, and from goats to actually making cheese and kind of back to goats again, and then winning this award. Congratulations again.
And thank you.
I want to encourage people to check out your website.
And if anybody is in the area, they can call the Cheese House or write us an email, and we could make it work with buying cheese from the office. But,
That's wonderful. Well, I guess one other thing, just to wrap up, and as if you look down the road and you know this journey you've been on so far, what makes you optimistic and hopeful about the next 4 or 5 years? If you were just saying, okay, here's, you know, this is good, you know, you won this award, but what gives you reason to feel like the future can be
better?
Just as good, or see the amount of improvement that you had in the last few years?
Well, I mean, I think when I start getting bummed because something's breaking, or often this happens when my brother's out of town because he fixes everything, but when something's breaking and I'm kind of losing it, I mean, I'll say, okay, last year was crazier than this, you know, and then, oh gosh, when I think about the first few months of making cheese, you know, it was much harder. So I try to, when I start to get overwhelmed, I try to think of, okay, last year, yes, we're in better shape. Oh, the year before, we're in better shape. So each year I could, there's definite points in it where I'm like, oh, at least that's not happening now. And, you know, we're getting closer to making this work and making it be a sustainable business. But I think it takes time. I mean, we work our butts off. But I think, you know, you have to pay your dues and you have to work hard for a long period of time, at least with the cheese, to make it work. I mean, there might be other businesses where it's not such a long haul to make it work. But
it is a long time you've been doing it, but you're still ahead of others. And I would imagine some people go to you and say, you know, tell me your story. What's the secret? I mean, we want to get our venture going, and maybe it's not cheese. Maybe it's something else that ties into all the way from the farmer. Do you find people that are seeking you guys out saying, hey, what's your tip?
Maybe.
Someday. That's something to aspire to.
Yeah, maybe well, after this they'll be
calling. Yeah, that's What's right. I tell you what, that happens to many people. They get on Farm to Table Talk podcast and just watch out. It takes off. We've got listeners all, like I said, we got listeners in North Carolina, but we got listeners really pretty much all over the world. We got people tuning in to Farm to Table Talk.
Oh, cool,
so
cool.
They're hearing about boxcar cheese,
nice. Well, thank
handmade
you.
Cheese. And I'm looking forward to going back in now the podcast is over and trying a little bit more of it.
Cool.
So, Samantha, thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.